Thank you. I'm going to flip through the first few slides pretty quickly because it's all basic stuff. This is me. I have no relationships to disclose. Objectives. Benefits of breastfeeding. Mothers agree with the benefits of breastfeeding. Gap between agreement and actual breastfeeding. Rates fall off quickly. Low-income moms return to work sooner. So the study I'm going to talk about was a qualitative study. The point on this slide is we use positive deviance as a framework for the study. And that's where we look at members of a community, a few members that are engaging in an uncommon behavior or a practice that results in an improved state of well-being. And what I wanted to look at is low-income moms that manage to balance working full-time and exclusive breastfeeding. Very few women do this, so I wanted to know what is it about these women, their situations, their environments, what is it about them that make them able to do this when so many other women can't. So that was the purpose of the study. Because this is a small population, we ended up interviewing 12 mothers. I did this as my dissertation research, and as every PhD student will tell you, they have the meanest committee in the world, and my committee was really mean, and they said 12 mothers aren't enough, and I kept saying, but you don't understand, not very many women do this. So we ended up also interviewing WIC breastfeeding peer counselors and then doing a focused literature review and then triangulating that data. I did interviews with the mothers and the peer counselors. We did line-by-line coding, if you care about that kind of thing, identified categories. So one of the most interesting results was that these women all had a very strong sense of themselves as mothers. They felt very strongly they were the only person in the world that could provide this kind of nutrition for their child. All of the mothers had experiences early in life as youngsters or adolescents where they were put into roles where they took on mothering responsibilities or they took on more adult responsibilities fairly early on in life. This quote is from a woman, one of the moms, that was raised by her dad. A lot of the women had situations where they had a lot of siblings or mom worked and they were the oldest or older and they were expected to take on some of these roles. One of the moms that I interviewed got pregnant at 17 and decided to give the baby up for adoption. And as she was going through that process, she was forced to think about herself in that role of mother and realize that she wasn't ready at that time. So all of these women had an opportunity to engage in a kind of cognitive rehearsal where they thought about what is it going to be like to be a mom. And that came into play, I believe, when they actually had their own children. The peer counselors also talked about emotional maturity, that mom has to be able to put her needs secondary to the baby's needs, because we all know that breastfeeding is not an easy thing to do. It can be very demanding and very difficult, and mom has to have a level of emotional maturity and see herself in that role as this is my primary responsibility as a mother or a big part of being a mother. And being able to make that kind of adjustment. One of the other results was the type and the timing of the support. And obviously, I think it goes without saying that different people play a role of support at different times during the pregnancy. Providers during pregnancy, family and friends during pregnancy and after birth, and the workplace on return to work. The interesting thing that we found when we looked at this was that there were really two kinds of support, acute need and routine support. That acute need support, all of the mothers experienced it, regardless of how many children they had breastfed. This quote is from a mother that she was actually a CLC. She taught breastfeeding classes. And they all talked about during that first week, we asked about the kinds of support that they got during that first week. And they all talked about being emotionally and mentally overwhelmed. And if there had not been someone right there to provide support to them when they most needed it, they would have given up and supplemented with formula despite their best intentions. This mom, as I said, was a CLC. Her husband was home after the baby was born. And she was 2 days in, crying, frustrated, didn't know what to do. Her husband came and took the baby and said, "What would you do if you were counseling one of your moms?" And then he walked out of the room. And she said she just burst into tears and cried and realized, yes, she can do this. But even an experienced mom still needed that support because she was so overwhelmed. When we talk about more routine support, once mom has that breastfeeding established and she's comfortable with it, then the moms moved into this status where they needed more routine support. And typically they turned to girlfriends first, family members, female family members. One mom went online, and when she did, she discovered she had been having kind of a weird experience with all of her children. This woman had 6 children. And with her last baby, she went online and looked for some support groups and realized that there was a name for what she had been experiencing. And even though she had just, you know, muddled through and charged through it before, discovering there was a name for what she was feeling and that she wasn't alone was a tremendous relief to her. Routine support in terms of providers, too. I think it's important to note that all of these women were very strong advocates on their own behalf when it came to dealing with their providers. They were not willing just to take their provider's word for it. This first mom had moved since her last child. Her previous doctor had provided her with some help. Her current doctor seemed completely confused by it. She got on the phone, called the first provider's office, said, hey, can you tell me what was that? They gave her the ingredients for the nipple cream. She called her current doctor, said, here's what it is. Do this. I want you to go to the pharmacy. And she really persisted until they did what she wanted them to do. The other mom quoted here, baby was tongue-tied. And I'm from Nebraska, and in Nebraska we have 2 physicians that practice breastfeeding medicine. There is an amazing amount of ignorance among providers about tongue-tie. So this mom went from doctor to doctor to doctor. Her provider said, I'm not going to do anything about tongue-tie until baby's 8 months old. And she was like, I'm breastfeeding. This makes no sense to me. And so she kept at it until she found somebody to help her. MilkWorks is a breastfeeding support provider in Lincoln, Nebraska. And of the 12 women I talked to, all 12 of them mentioned MilkWorks. So it's a group that's doing great work. But the women really advocated on their own behalf. When it came to the workplace, WIC peer counselors encourage moms to make a plan, talk to their employer. There's some materials that they can use to help talk to their employers. When we talked to the moms, some of the moms kind of got into a routine, tried to pump according to what their work schedule was going to be. Some of them tried to get baby on a feeding schedule. Some of them started pumping early to build up their supply. But when it came to the actual workplace, it was on a need-to-know basis. They didn't want to go in and talk. One mom reported that she did try to talk to her boss about it. Her boss got all weirded out and sent her to HR. This second mom, participant 12, when I was asking her these questions, she just gave me this look and she goes, I didn't ask permission to do this. I just went in and did it, which was pretty typical. Literature, they don't really talk about this idea of cognitive rehearsal or unintended pregnancy relationship to breastfeeding. It doesn't address how those early experiences influence adult decisions as a mother, which I think is a huge area for research. If you're in the academic world, I'd love to partner with people to look at this some more. Literature reinforces the notion that women with support are more likely to be successful, and it also reinforces this notion that women are reluctant across the board, regardless of income level, they're reluctant to talk about their breastfeeding status at work. And it gets into this whole murky thing of our society and sexuality. So strong self as mothers, timing and type of support play a role. Future research, there is tons. I'd like to do more with positive deviance as a framework. Let's look at women that are successful in meeting these goals, figure out what's going on with them, and then can we translate and help other women. We need more help from employers to help them understand their role in supporting moms, and it doesn't need to be a big onerous thing. You know, it doesn't cost anything to set aside a room, really. And then clarifying the role of physicians, nurses, and family members during acute need. And we're seeing more hospitals, more breastfeeding classes, inviting dad, but also inviting grandma or whoever is in that woman's immediate support system to come so that they can learn about, this is correct latch, here's some different positions, So when mom is in that moment and she's completely overwhelmed, there's somebody else that can step in and say, hey, let's try this, or, oh, the latch looks like this, or whatever, and help her out. References, in case you care, that's my contact information, and again, more than happy to talk to anybody about this.
Okay, we have plenty of time for questions and discussion. Anne. Okay, so to repeat Anne's comment, people involved in the collaborative are volunteering their time, but
it's not free,
and not everyone has the time to volunteer. So one of the things we thought is if we ever did get money, we would like to pay our faculty on the collaborative. And that's true. The people that come to the meetings, some of them might be paid by their employers to come to the meetings as part of their time. I don't know. That's true. That is true. Lori.
So Lori Winter from New Jersey. I have a related question. Maybe you can give us advice. So our statewide coalition actually came out of the community, not the hospitals. And now the Department of Health is working with the hospitals. And so the community are actually volunteering their time to meet and find ways to come together, and they're really struggling. And yet the department has resources and have venues and have been much more effective. Instrumental in getting the hospitals to the table, 100% participation. So how do you then bring those together? How do you bring the community to the hospital in this coalition model?
How do you bring the community to the hospital? So who in the community are you talking about? From the community?
So there's stakeholders, there are lactation consultants, there are moms, there's attorneys, there's consumers.
Been a challenge because we have wanted to do that. So one thing that our coalition has done, because as one thing we did to as part of one of our new strategic plan is our goal was to address the disparities issue in breastfeeding, and as part of that we surveyed our membership and realized that, sadly, at the time we surveyed ourselves, we were mostly middle-aged white women healthcare providers. This is so painful for me to even say. And so we we had dues. They were modest, like $30 a year. So we decided that we would make membership free for WIC peer counselors, WIC recipients, students, and stay-at-home parents. And we, yes, and they've come, and they've joined. And the word got out through our DPH WIC people, and they have come to meetings, and they have joined us, and we're really working on like getting them to the table, so that's helped a lot. So,
kind of a secret, but yeah. The Indian Health Service has a very robust data system, so we will follow the children out for 20 years. So we'll have some quicker results in a couple of years, but hopefully 5-10 years we'll have even better results. Our obesity data that we're just preliminarily looking at is, yes, it's up, but it's plateaued. So what we're hoping is it dives, and that's we'll be watching that in the next few years.
Sep and I will want to borrow that for our obesity study that we're doing. We'll get back to you.
Okay.
Yes.
Many of our pharmacists are commissioned officers, which is what I am. I'm an officer in the Commissioned Health, Public Health Service, and there's a fellow officer in the back there, too. And I have the delightful position to be overseer of the Indian Health Service, so I have very briskly just said that we're doing this, and it has followed. So we're a little special in that respect, but I think what I've learned is that when you identify the good pieces of why you're doing it, it's not just because we're doing it. It's because the kids need it, and it's the kids that we're working on. And I think I've said that and beat the providers up enough about it, but they finally understand that it's not because it's something we just kind of want to do. It's because it's to help the youngest population. So that's probably where most of them are buying in and doing it. We have five tribal hospitals in the lower 48 and seven in Alaska. The five are on pathways to become baby-friendly designated. Just about all of them, right, Ann? Four out of five. One's still lagging behind. I can't put my thumb on them to make them do that. But what we see is very commonly when something happens good in the federal side, the tribal side frequently picks up and follows suit. So we're very hopeful that that will happen in the next year or so.
My question is for Naomi. So I'm coming from the state perspective. Mm-hmm. So
which state?
Indiana.
Okay.
So I'm wishing you were in our state, of course. what can we do at the state level to support counties? And I know you're going to need money, so go beyond money to infuse the sort of excitement that you generated organically.
For worksite or schools or both or clinics?
That's the second part. Where do you recommend beginning? Like hospital systems, that continuum?
I think the community health care clinics is pretty much the next stage that I think that county and state government can really influence. Federal qualified health centers, we have touch points on those, direct touch points. So I think that the states could really take a look at those healthcare clinics as a very direct step. Our state actually has a model that we mimicked our county efforts off of. In fact, the state's now looking at us to look at our implementation steps. So I think that that would be the best step forward for a state. I think we could all collectively look, though, together for HR and worksite policies. I think that could be a national movement. So we could have some discussions about that, too.
Stepped up because it is a traditional event, and we may be able to say that for the Indian Health Service, but I think any community can turn around and look to the dads and say, you want your kids to be healthy and happy and well, and I think you'd get a similar buy-in. It's, I think, really pushing the fact that you're taking care of the kids and not just just trying to do what people have been doing for years. It's really an opportunity to prevent obesity, which is really a big, huge issue for us. And that's one way that people will listen.
Yes, I have. I really think I'm also, I just so happen to be working with a colleague on writing out some research they did on teen pregnancy and some of the, in the state of Nebraska, and some of the things they found made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. Things like for males, it's getting a woman pregnant is a sign of their masculinity and they give no thought to what happens to the child. But I think we need to, you know, when we go into third world countries, we talk a lot about family planning and we really work with moms. And I have to wonder what would happen if we took that approach here in the U.S. and started maybe at a younger age, as soon as those girls start hitting puberty, and we sit down and we start educating them. Instead of just taking contraceptive and STI approach, what we really talk about family planning and taking more of a longer term perspective, which I know is hard with teens because they're invincible and they live in the moment, but really encouraging them in that way, and then also doing more to help these young women, and I don't know how we do this, but help them understand you need to love yourself before you can really love and raise a child, and getting them to the point where, regardless of their circumstances, they see their own worth and they're more empowered to make decisions about their lives, thinking in the long term. Again, I don't know how we do that, but it's really pushed me to think about that even more, about how do we start younger and really help these young girls understand that they do have potential and they are lovable just the way they are. They don't need a baby to be loved. And so they have that opportunity for that cognitive rehearsal kind of early on. And how do we work that into what we're doing in helping to address teen pregnancy?
What was their education level?
The women in this study were all what we kind of call paraprofessionals. There were nurses, moms that worked at banks, trying to remember. Some of them worked at an insurance agency. Some of them had college education, some did not. We tried really hard to recruit women that worked like in manufacturing plants and Walmart and that kind of thing. And the peer counselors were telling me that I had held WIC offices literally going through their records page by page by page, trying to find moms to participate. And what they told me is the moms that work in those really low wage jobs just don't even try, because they just know it's not, they're just not feeling like they can make it work. So those moms just kind of breastfeed for as long as they can, and then they go back to work. And for some of those moms, it's as soon as they get a doctor to sign off on their note and release them back to work. So if they get 2 weeks off, they're lucky.
Yes. What?
The sign-in sheet.
Great. Thank you. Yes.
We looked at the inclusion criteria were mothers 19 to 45, age of majority is 19 in Nebraska, and so to avoid the whole IRB mess with children, we went 19 to 45. They had to have been receiving WIC benefits because we used WIC eligibility as a criteria for low income, a proxy for low income, and I take that back. They had to be eligible for WIC requirements, not necessarily receiving the benefits. Child had to be less than a year old, and then they had to have been working for, and we started out saying working for 2 months, and then we had so much trouble recruiting that we went to just working period, working full time, at least 30 hours a week. I recruited through, we have, I want to say 18 WIC clinics in the state of Nebraska, went to those directors and started recruiting there. Again, the folks were going through their records and saying, sorry, we can't help you, it sounds really great, share your results with us, but we can't help you. I then went to the State Breastfeeding Coalition in both Nebraska and Iowa. I reached out to several breastfeeding groups. There's a group called Omaha Natural Parents. Reached out to those groups, posted on their Facebook pages, you know, just spread the word as much as I could. Went back to the WIC clinics again and just really struggled to find enough moms.
Them into mama bears.
Right.
Yeah, and that's a good point because we don't, again, qualitative study, and we didn't really look at, is it because they were reporting retrospectively, was it their experience with breastfeeding that made them remember and feel this way, whereas if they weren't, they hadn't had that breastfeeding experience, maybe they would have perceived it differently. So yeah, that's a good question, good point. Something to explore.
My name is Randy Wilkinson, and I actually work for the Poverty Initiative. I'm thrilled to.
I need to get your card.
Yeah. I want to talk to you. I'm wondering in the study if you found, if you looked at very specific behaviors that these mothers were doing that were different from the rest of the community, the other mothers, specific behaviors not around motivation. Or maybe the support, were there behaviors that are replicable to other mothers who are struggling with the same areas?
The short answer is no. The thing I was hoping that I would find, XYZ, and let's take and you know, do training or do something else with these other moms to help them. What I found were really more, I don't know if character traits or personality traits would be the correct word. All of these women came across as incredibly persistent women. It's like they were very determined, not easily swayed, which to me is not necessarily something that you can teach somebody to do. You either are persistent or you are not. I mean, I'm sure you probably do things to kind of foster that, but yeah, the answer to your question is no. I wish I would have found some things, but I did not. Right. And I think including dads and grandmas and finding out, asking the mom, who is your support system, and then bringing all those people and making sure that they have good breastfeeding training, that in-depth training that, you know, looks at, here's what a latch looks like, here's how to solve latch problems, you know, those kinds of things, so that when mom has those problems, there's somebody right there that can step in and help her with that. Many of the peer counselors that I talk to, I don't know that they're supposed to do this, they would give out their personal cell phone numbers, and moms would text them. They'd get texts at 3:00 in the morning and be willing to help solve. The peer counselors were absolutely inspiring. They were so dedicated to what they did. But I think there are ways that we can do something to make sure that acute need support is there.
In the back.
What's written in a policy and then procedures, right, or programs that support the policy. So you can design your policy to say that additional support, such as a group support. Yes, absolutely. The more the mother support groups at a work site is huge. We have one at our Health and Human Services Agency, and we've gotten reports back that made a huge difference, even beyond the lactation room or beyond the lockers or the pump rentals or what have you. So yeah, you can. I have some sample policies to show you, but then there's also the procedures and the trainings for management. There's trainings for administrators. So there's a lot of supports to implement your policy as effective as you can.
Just connect to that. So California, you said California has a law. It's the national law, right?
Yes. No,
it's
for
hourly workers.
Great.
Federal law says, I think, per year, and there is no age limit in California. So if a mom is pumping for her kids,
a lot of employees that are not hourly, right?
Right.
So, yeah.
Yes.
This is sort of on the same topic. I'm interested in whether you were able to do any training with employees in general. That's something I'd really like to see. I do rescue and promotion work and maybe kind of ramping up for doing this and really thought a lot about that third piece, you know, it's time and space and then it's freedom from harassment. And we have a lot in Maine that's a little bit stronger than the federal law too. But, you know, so much of what I hear anecdotally from people is like the workplace culture not supporting moms to have the time. So not even like, I mean,
so it's peer employee.
Right.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, annoying like people who are grossed out by milk in the fridge or we've been really trying to put out the message that this is about your coworkers too. So if your coworkers are making it feel like it's an unsupportive environment, that's rough.
Yeah.
And I'm just, you know, how do you get at that, basically, the big question. And I was curious if in any of the HR relationships, if they've been willing to train all the employees.
That's actually a charge that we have on our plate with the Health and Human Services Agency, and we have mandated employee trainings, and one of LMS is an online type mandatory training, and it was aimed to do exactly what you're doing. So when I develop it, I will be able to share it. But that's a very good point, is that one of the factors that we were hammering into the employers is that it affects the coworkers' time, because if your other coworker is gone and absent or turnover, the amount of work that the other folks are going to have to uplift is enormous. So, you know, people are protected for their own time. Yeah, that was a contractual obligation that we inserted, is that the contractor had to work with at least 15 businesses that were of low wage earners. And the situations were very different, working with sophisticated HRs as opposed to a gas station.
Mm-hmm.
Hugely different. And so, you know, when I was just and one of the bigger sectors of employee wellness that we're going to be looking at next is agriculture. There's a lot of women that are going into agriculture and working in fields, which is extremely difficult. So yeah, we did address that. The implementation of things were very different. It was a lot more technical assistance that was provided. So if you have specific questions related to specific business sectors, then we can work through that. And
yeah, it just seems to me that that's always going to be the most afraid to ask and have the least opportunity to talk.
Right.
Because that's the way that they work, wherever they are.
Right. And one of the things that we were hoping to ensure with the policies is that the either business owner, who is usually the manager in those situations, is vocally supporting those women before they go out on leave, right? That they vocalize to those women, when you come back, you will be supported. And so we're trying to reverse it, is that yes, those women are most likely not going to communicate to their bosses, especially about this. I mean, they have communication barriers regardless about employee, you know, regular work issues. So we're trying to twist it and ensure that those owners and or managers are vocalizing that support will be there for them to come back, so that communication is reversed. Very good question. I was actually, is this being recorded still? Yep. We can talk.
Okay.
No. In fact, we're very risk averse county. And in fact, here you go with the breastfeeding dirty word. We were not allowed to call it breastfeeding policy. We were supposed to call it lactation.
difficult.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, baby steps, right? You know, you get in there and we're starting to be able to say the B word in the county, so. Yeah.
2 minutes left. One last question. The forum has our next session right after this in Grand Salon 7 on breastfeeding and employment, if anybody's interested, at 2:30. So anyway, thank you all very much for coming. And if you didn't get a chance to sign in on the sign-in sheet, it's up front. So I want to thank all of our speakers.